At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV on another Misery Monday presented by Chinigo Mios, a 2025 top workplace. Visit careers with MIOS.com. You know, for a solid month, and this team has been losing for basically 2 months, seven games in a row, right? But for a solid month, they were getting bludgeoned. Lions, Seattle Seahawks, Cowboys, Chiefs. These games weren't close. The last two against the Dolphins, and then last night in overtime, you have closer games. And it does seem like they are playing harder. Do you agree with that? 1-800-636-1067. And why would that be?
I might argue not playing teams that are offensively talented as the Seahawks and the Lions, some of those earlier opponents.
And the way they lost to the Dolphins, I'm sure you guys talked about it ad nauseum, but that was kind of a bad loss because they had so many opportunities.
Kind of a bad loss.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Bad.
So
bad
I don't know
loss.
How if you can say they played harder in that game when they made so many dumb mistakes.
I've never really
that was
come
a bad
in
loss
here
against
and
the Dolphins.
Thought complete lack of effort. I just thought not good.
Just outclassed.
Outcoached, right. Outclassed, and I've never come in here and just thought, man, they just quit.
But I would say last night was different because of they're playing, you know, not playing the Dolphins who aren't going to the playoffs. They're playing the number one seed in the AFC and had a chance to win the game if they get a completion there in the red zone. So I would say last night I saw it, certainly defensively.
Mm-hmm. And they've been more palatable to watch. Like the Seahawks game, unless you have like fantasy implications, if you're a Commanders fan, you're ready to turn that game off because you just know that they can't compete with this team. They can't slow down Sam Darnold. That offense is too good against this current iteration of the Commanders' defense. Like last night, at least you were able to stick through it and be like, okay, they're competing with one of the better teams.
And also they got some guys back because they got McLaurin back.
Right.
And they got Will Harris back.
Right.
They were off of a 2-week bye. Mm-hmm. All right. So they didn't play last week. So they were rested. So maybe that had a lot to do with it.
I think they're tackling better.
Okay.
Like how many games, effort's very hard to quantify. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned some of those games. I thought the Chiefs game, they had a good half. And then the second half, the Chiefs
just outclassed.
Yeah. The Cowboys, they couldn't stop the Cowboys offense. The Lions complete. I mean, I don't think the Lions punted once. Think, like you were talking about.
I think it's a combo. It's a talent issue and a scheme issue.
Yeah.
I never thought, man, they just quit. They laid down. I never have thought that. I just thought.
Haven't really terrible. Thought that, although defensively in a couple of those games, you kind of wondered about the tackling. And the tackling has been better, but I don't know if it's just bad effort or bad players. I mostly think it's bad players.
I think that's generally what it's been. Lack of talent. Lack of talent and, you know, honestly, just DQ's a better coordinator than Joe Witt.
It's almost unfair, though, because Dan Quinn, he took over when they faced subpar offenses. Hey, like, you wonder, if Dan Quinn faced the Lions, who rolled up over 500 yards against them.
Probably are going to score in the mid-40s, whether Dan Quinn's coordinator or not.
But maybe they make a stop or two.
Whatever tweaks Dan Quinn was going to make, he wasn't going to slow down that Seahawks offense when they came to Northwest Stadium. I'm sorry, he just doesn't have the personnel to match up with guys like JSN, and Darnold was just locked in that day.
I just think he's...
like, he couldn't miss.
I think DQ's worth a punt or two. Overall.
It seems like it.
He's worth a punt or two.
Might be right.
And that's good. We need it.
And they're not going to face an explosive offense
next week.
No. Especially if Brosmer's out there.
Has anybody seen Joe Witt? Has he been shown on any of the broadcasts?
He didn't show him last night, unless I missed it.
He might as well be like taking a month-long sabbatical somewhere, because I haven't seen the guy.
Now think about it, though.
He's going to be doing that in a few weeks.
Usually that is like a go-to during a broadcast where they'll show a booth.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Did they show either of the booths yesterday?
Yes.
Can't remember.
For Denver, I thought.
They showed the coaching?
I don't remember because they would show Peyton and his play sheet all the time.
I mean, they showed the owners. I don't know if they showed the
booth. I don't remember them showing booth at all.
They showed Jaden.
Peyton's play sheet definitely looks like a menu from a restaurant. It's so many words.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's both sides. It's laminated. It's fancy.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a strange question from you, to be honest with you, because I've never particularly questioned the effort. I just thought we're not that good. We've been hurt, and you know, coaching's had an impact on this team too.
Let me ask you a different question.
If you're
question.
Down 28-0 in a game, maybe you kind of step back a little bit and you don't give as much as you would if it was
tied. You might make
tied.
A business decision,
but
here and there.
But they seen also a lot of that.
But also, when you're playing much better teams, it's hard to.
Maybe the sense of penalties, like some of those games where we were riddled with penalties, you get particularly frustrated, especially like false starts. Those are so annoying. And Zach Ertz has annoyed me with that a couple times.
Zach Ertz just annoys me when he's a half yard from the first down marker. It's hard to criticize him in yesterday's game because he did have 10 catches.
He played well yesterday.
But there was that third down where he finished 1 yard short. And then they had to go for it on
fourth
down.
Were they
under
center more yesterday? It seemed like they were a little bit, huh? I noticed a few times. It's not something that I look for every week, though. And I've just been looking at it now because JP's been harping on it. So I kind of noticed it a few times that they did it.
But I know Bo Nix was under center a fair amount.
Yeah.
I didn't notice Marcus being under center that often.
I noticed a few times. I just don't particularly look for it.
Yeah. 1-800-636-1067. Did any of you have a problem with them going for two for the win?
No, they had
no.
to.
No.
They had to.
It's a lost season.
No brainer.
Yeah.
Absolutely no brainer. So by far their best chance to win.
And Quinn's a go-for-it guy by nature. So, I expected him to do that.
It would have been cowardly to not go for it. And I'm not typically in that camp always, but that was just such a no-brainer.
Who was he throwing to? They said he was wide open.
He was wide open.
Who was it?
The running back, I think.
Oh, was it?
He was wide open.
Well, when you take 20 steps back from the line of scrimmage, it's tough to complete.
That's a tough completion.
It's tough to complete that
pass.
He
was under duress. But he could have done it.
We were talking about whether you're encouraged or not. 1-800-636-1067. Nikki Javala from The Athletic had some stats from Next Gen Stats.
Mm-hmm.
Washington held the Broncos to a 17.9% pressure rate, which is the Broncos' lowest since week 3 of 2023. Tunsil allowed just 2 pressures to Nick Benito on 28 matchups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on that last play when Benito deflected the pass, Tunsil had to slide over because there was a linebacker blitzing.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a choice to make.
Right.
He took the inside guy. Mm-hmm. Benito went on the outside. So I don't know how they score that, but two pressures on 28 matchups. Connerly, now he had a hold, but zero pressures to Jonathan Cooper in 26 matchups. And Cosme just one pressure on 55 pass blocks.
Oh, the offensive line was a bright. They were a bright spot.
They did a decent job.
I mean, if you hold the Broncos to two sacks in a game in 2025, you're doing something right. Mm-hmm. And Kingsbury definitely schemed it up so that they would be getting that ball out quickly.
Yeah, Marcus is good at that. I'll give him that. Getting rid of the ball. Where he gets in trouble is when there is a little bit of pressure, yeah. And then
he kind of panics.
You never know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
You never know. I'd rather him just tuck it and run because he's darn good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's
used the wheels, man.
He's really
got him.
He's really good at it.
They had a couple design plays for him, design runs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he'll stick around or go for a starting job? Because there are some teams, like we're talking about the Vikings,
yeah.
Who they play next.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be some teams that could use a Marcus Mariota over the direct that they put out there on the field.
There might be a handful that would be willing to use him as a starter.
Now, there's,
I still think he's a backup. He's a pretty good backup.
I think
I still
he's exposed himself as a backup.
I think he's a backup.
Yeah. I think he's exposed himself as a guy that can be good in stretches.
I think teams that need quarterbacks, they're going to go into the draft and try and pluck one versus getting Mariota.
Is Rattler still starting? No,
Tyler Shuck.
No, is Rattler hurt?
Shuck's looking decent.
He got hurt, and then they decided to go with Shuck.
Yeah.
I think Mariota's just going to keep playing it like one-year deal. Like, why not keep doing that? Keep picking whatever is the best scenario for you. And for him right now, it's here with the Commanders, and maybe it will be again next season. I just don't think there's going to be a big market for him as a starter.
Do you think, now I understand why they did it, but do you think that Kingsbury was a little bit offended that they took Pritchard? Now, apparently he was teammates with Locke at Stanford.
Oh, they're like best friends.
Yeah. Over like Cliff. Like it's kind of interesting, right? Your quarterback guy gets the job, you're the OC, and you're the hot, sexy guy. And
I think Cliff has higher aspirations than coach at Stanford.
Yeah, I don't know if Cliff would take the Stanford game or Stanford job.
I mean, great gig for Pritchard.
I mean, it might have been a great gig 20 years ago. I don't know if it's a great gig in 2025.
Not in that conference.
Okay.
I think Cliff's stock has gone down.
That's what I'm insinuating.
I think he's going to be back next year.
Yeah, I think so too. For better or worse. I don't know if I want him back. I'm kind of over him.
Mad on Cliff?
Yeah. I mean, just don't bring in Chip Kelly. I mean, like, I think there are a lot of guys that are okay.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of bright offensive minds.
Story that I saw was that Chip Kelly was never allowed to run his offense.
Is that true? They handcuffed him?
That he was strapped to.
Whose offense is he running?
Pete Carroll's.
Pete Carroll wanted
a heavy emphasis on running the football and... You know, he wants to win with defense.
How's that working out for Pete Carroll?
I'm just saying.
So why do you hire Chip Kelly and give him $6 million a year?
Yeah.
Because you work for the Raiders and they'll spend money on whoever.
Why wouldn't you want to run the ball with Geno Smith back there?
And
he's been sacked 50 times.
And you spent the number 6 pick on Ashton Jeanty.
I mean, I don't want Geno Smith dropping back.
Well, they know that that's a disaster.
He's not going to be there.
They're in the quarterback market.
Yeah.
This offseason, whether it's drafting somebody.
I mean, if you look at how many times he's been sacked over the last 5 or 6 weeks, it's 5 or 6 a game.
Right. He just gets eaten alive back there.
He does.
He's flipping off the fans at Allegiant Stadium. It's just not going well. It's not gonna end well for him there.
Who's the D coordinator that he's going to bring in?
I don't know.
I don't know that he's going to.
I personally think he should do it, but I think he wants to be an overseer.
Yeah, I think he wants to be a CEO type.
I personally think he should be the DC because he's good at it. But I think Cakes is right. I think he's going to bring somebody in.
It's hard to know because probably 4 or 5 teams will fire their head coach, which will mean all of those staffs will be available.
Who's the best D guy? Is Jonathan Gannon a D guy?
He's a defensive guy. He'd make a hell of a defensive coordinator hire if Arizona fires him, which they probably will.
Right. Maybe a guy like him.
Your guy, Greg Williams, still available.
I love him.
He's coaching at, I believe,
Tennessee State or Tech. One of the two.
It's one of those two.
Yeah.
It's not the Tennessee with the checkerboard in the end zone. I know that.
All right. Let's go to that Tennessee. That's a weird name. His name is Pulpit. Been on hold for an hour. Pulpit. What's up, buddy? Hey.
Pulp.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hey, good.
What's up?
Hey, you remember I told y'all about 4 weeks ago before y'all hung the phone up on me that y'all needed to run the ball more. You remember that conversation?
I mean, sure. Yeah, you did say that.
Right, so, yeah, you're the first guy to say run the ball more.
You missed out on a Super Bowl, possibly a Super Bowl last year, because like I told B. Mitch, I said, B. Mitch, you know what? You wasn't Eric Dickerson, but you were efficient. And with that team y'all had last year, it may be even the moves that Adam Peters, because y'all been down on Adam Peters. I've been hearing y'all talk bad about Adam Peters. But Adam Peters went and got you Goldman. He got you Kinlaw to put in the middle of that defense. And so it was up to Cliff Kingsbury to say to himself, you know what? I got to run this football no matter what.
They're third in the league in rushing.
They do.
Well, it don't matter. What you have is an efficient running game. And y'all over here talking about we need to go get – I mean, y'all need to go get because I ain't no Commanders fan. Y'all know what fan I am. I ain't going to even say
I actually don't know.
One week ban.
Yeah.
Valdez doesn't like pulpit.
Well, it's annoying. Just get to your point.
Who was he a fan of? I can't remember.
I think he probably is a Dallas fan, if my memory serves correct.
I think you're probably right.
I have no recollection.
Yeah,
of
I have
pulpit.
No recollection.
I probably shouldn't know that, but I think I do know that.
Yeah. All right, coming up next, we got to play the Rodney Harrison audio.
Yeah,
I felt bad.
Jason hasn't heard it.
It might be in poor taste. I mean, if we know he didn't have a stroke, then sure.
I don't think he had a stroke. Okay. But we can play it.
I think he just got caught with his pants down on national TV. Yeah. He was scrambling.
It reminds me of, I remember years ago, Jason talked about Buster Olney. Remember you talked about Buster Olney one time? He was like on MLB Tonight and just froze.
Sometimes it happens.
Was it Buster Olney?
The first time Josina Anderson was on live TV on ESPN,
she
nearly melted into the ground like the Wicked Witch in the Wizard of Oz.
That red light can do it to you. We'll play that audio. Plus, some interesting comments from Aaron Andrews. We'll get into that next here on The Junkies.
At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Washington for the win. Mariota has it rejected by Bonino, and Denver has won 9 in a row.
That was a very good football game last night. A highly entertaining NFL football game. I mean, haymaker after haymaker with both teams barely standing at the end, and yet they were still throwing punches and landing over and over again. It's a shame that it didn't end differently. I wanted it to end differently. I know some of you, and I've read a little bit of the social media from late last night, were like, perfect scenario. They played great, but they didn't win. Better draft position. No, I wanted them to win that game. It was a game played by two teams who made a lot of really good plays in the game. Unfortunately, Denver made the last good play, and it was very decisive. Nick Benito smacking down the Marcus Mariota two-point conversion throw, which was wide open for what would have been a walk-off win. Denver in overtime, 27-26. Good morning, everybody. This from JC. I just read this beauty. Seven straight losses. I'm done. You have to win that game. Mariota just has to put some air under it. If they had a better backup quarterback, they would have won the game last night. This from my guy Kevin. It's a different Kevin, not the normal Kevin. Kevin said that Doc was killing Kingsbury last night after the game. I'm like, no. You must have had that wrong. He had to be praising Kingsbury. They shredded the number one defense in the league all night long. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But look, it's always tough at 3-9. It is. It's hard to shake also the post-traumatic Snyder syndrome that everybody has. This a second straight overtime loss. This one, unlike the Miami loss in Madrid, though, because this was truly against not only one of the league's best teams, but the league has two teams that are on this massive win streak, New England and Denver. And in Denver's case, they're just flat out either the best defense or one of the top two. I think Houston's really close right now defensively. Those two teams are just dominant defensive football teams. Denver was anyway coming into this game. I'll have my game take. It's going to be a long list. Sorry for those that feel like last night was a lost cause. It's going to be a long list of things that I really liked from the game, and I'm very aware that they lost the game 27-26. And look, some of the things on the game take list that are good and positive and encouraging and promising in terms of the way I feel personally about them, I understand, and I'll concede this point going in. It's in some cases, like with the defense, in comparison to what it's been. Like, the defense overall wasn't great, but compared to what it's been, it was really improved, much improved. I mean, they let Denver, they were a sieve in overtime, letting Denver go down and score a touchdown in five plays. But still, it was much better than it's been. So when I get to that, understand that, especially as it relates to the defense, I'm conceding that some of this is in comparison to what it's been in recent weeks. The defense has improved since Dan Quinn took it over. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, he hasn't had to call a defense against Detroit or Seattle or Kansas City, all right? Miami and Denver aren't quite those teams offensively, but still, it looks different. It feels different. There are plays being made, and it's been impactful. Cliff Kingsbury, I mean, I love a lot of the people that weigh in on this stuff, but if you don't think Cliff Kingsbury had a good night last night, I'm not sure what you were watching. He literally had the league's number one defense, and Vance Joseph, a really good defensive coordinator, reeling the entire night. They ran the ball well. That was huge in the game. Terry McLaurin's return was so impactful. God, have they missed having a true, you know, number one wide receiver, starting wide receiver on the field. Not just because of the plays he can make, but because of the way a defense has to defend you. When you don't have real NFL wide receivers on the field, which has been the case in some of these games, you don't have to worry about getting beat in man coverage. You don't have to worry about, you can focus on the line of scrimmage and dominating that. Marcus Mariota, my God, what a blanking night he had after a brutal interception early in the game. And there were a couple of other plays that were head scratchers, no doubt, but he turned into a flat out gunslinger in the fourth quarter and in overtime. I thought, for the most part, the good so far outweighed the bad. The O-line last night against that defense, to give up two sacks and not, no, a lot of it is on Cliff. Cliff gets a lot of the credit because he had a game plan that understood what they were facing. Like, drop back wasn't going to be the way to do it. You had to run the ball. You had to go quick game. It was constant early on. You know, really up until the latter stages of the second half, when they had to drop back, but at that point they had Denver's defense in complete. You know, they were flummoxed. They didn't know what was going on. But the quick game, the run game, the O-line, Treylon Burks, the catch he made, his return to the lineup, who knew? Wagner had a pick. How about the Wagner play on the third and four on Denver's last drive in regulation? You had to get a stop, or maybe the game ends there with a first down. And Wagner appears to check to a play that pulls Jacob Martin back into coverage right to where Bo Nix was throwing it. And he gets the pass breakup. Just a lot of good things from the game last night. And I'll get to all of them in the game take. And yes, I realize they didn't win the game. Denver had 27 points. Our team had 26 at the end. It's a seventh straight loss. They are 3-9. I'm fully aware of that. But I'm going to focus here before I get to my game take on a team that has had nothing go right for it all year long. By the way, add last night's finish to the list of gut punches. But I'm going to focus on what I think I've watched here in the last 2 weeks. And not just the last 2 weeks. I mean, there was the Detroit game and the Seattle games were really, really disturbing. There's no doubt about it. But we also, you know, at least those that are willing to entertain the idea that actually injuries aren't an excuse, they're actually really impactful to a season. They just didn't have players on the field, and their defense was a complete and utter train wreck. But I think what we saw last night is we're seeing a culture that is healthy. You know, I talked to somebody this morning who was in the locker room after the game, and he said, this is just so much different, and it's been different. You know, even during this losing stretch, they don't have losers. They don't have guys looking to get out quickly. They don't have guys throwing guys under the bus. This isn't the Snyder era. You know, it's a culture that's healthy despite 9 losses in a row, despite a season that has gone sideways at every turn, despite taking just one body blow week in and week out. In Madrid against the Dolphins and last night, you saw a team that is nowhere near ready to bail. Not yet, anyway, and I don't think it will. I think the players that they focused on bringing in, going back to last year, have a certain team-first profile, competitive level that leads to having the ability to survive stretches like the one they've gone through this year. Now, surviving, it's not going to lead to a winning record this year. It's not going to lead to playoff games this year. But continuing to prepare to win games and play to win has legs, in my opinion. If you don't agree, that's fair. I'm not going to try to talk you out of it. I think it has legs. This is a head coach, and I've pointed this out since the day he was hired. And now, you know, after one full season here, in the last 4 regular season games of his head coaching career, he's 20-4. And in many of those seasons, their playoff hopes were extinguished. They weren't really legitimately there. This is a guy that doesn't lose teams. They don't go, you know, and start chucking people, including him and his staff, under the bus. For whatever reason, Dan Quinn is well-liked, well-respected, and very much believed in. His message over the years as a head coach has not failed him in seasons like this. It's assisted him. You know, so I've said this a bunch over the last year and a half. I like Dan Quinn, and it is in comparison to what we had. I like this group in the front office. I like Adam Peters. I like our football organization right now. I do. Again, I get it. It's like, yeah, Sheehan, like, after what we went through for 25 years, we'd take anybody. It's true that almost anybody was going to look good in comparison. But if I were being objective and didn't have the 25 years of Snyder saddled to my brain and my heart, I still think I would be like, nah, this dude, he's there's something to him. There's something to the organization right now that is a good culture. You know, Treylon Burks on the postgame show apparently told London Fletcher and Bram, I think they do the interview, that it's just, you know, it's the culture that he's absolutely enjoyed, that this place is a place that players really like. We saw that before the season began with Ben's agent survey that said Washington now is among the places that people feel like good people, good coaches, good setting, good culture. I don't, you know, we've talked a lot about this over the last, you know, month or so. I just can't relate to the vitriol. I can't relate right now. I'm not knocking you for it. I'm knocking you for the wanting to fire everybody. I'm not knocking you for being passionate and being angry and being upset. That's better than being apathetic. But I think, you know, those of you who have wanted everybody to be fired, you saw last night with just some of their key contributors back on the field how much different it looks versus practice squad and off the street guys. Imagine when the starting quarterback gets back. Look, Mariota last night. I mean, the dude was. He was awesome in so many ways. I said, you know, this was a game between two teams throwing one haymaker after another. Mariota was throwing a lot of the haymakers for our team. And I loved the performance. It was resilient. It was tough. It was fearless. It was different for him than some of his other stops. But there's no doubt in my mind, and I don't think there should be a doubt in most of your minds, that with Jaden Daniels, they win that game last night. They beat Miami and Madrid too, and they're 5-7, and the season's on. But he's been hurt, hasn't been available. Terry got back last night, but he's been hurt. He's missed a bunch of games. Will Harris back last night, Payne back last night, you know, and they'll hopefully continue to get more. And by the way, let me be clear, that's no knock on Mariota, because he might be the best backup quarterback in the league. And as we've talked about, this particular system and situation is the best of his career. But you see the difference with some of the key players coming back. Having Terry is, of course, a game changer. Having him out there with a healthy Debo and even Burks is completely different than Tay Martin and Robbie Chosen and Jacoby Jones and Chris Moore. By the way, did you hear Chris Collinsworth last night mention what I told you guys a few weeks back about the Seattle game? You know, I told you that kind of in the response to the Kurt Warner critique video on Jaden, but Chris Collinsworth mentioned it last night as well, that in that Seattle game, the receivers they had in that game, it was an absolute S show. They were running the wrong routes in the game. Remember how Jaden immediately would tuck it and start to scramble? It's because where he was looking, the receiver wasn't running to based on the play. And Collinsworth said it last night so matter-of-factly. It was interesting. Clearly, they told, you know, Tirico and Collinsworth in the lead-up about what had happened in the Seattle game. But I mentioned that to you guys a couple of weeks ago, and you guys were like, oh, you're going to kill. I didn't kill Kurt Warner. There were some plays that he pointed out that were legitimate. Steve Suter said the same thing in the film breakdown. But a bigger issue for that game that night was they just didn't have guys in the game that should be in the game, which has been the case all year long. But look, last night, Will Harris back, Payne back, Terry back. I thought Payne, by the way, played great. I think he did. He made a lot of plays in the run game, that's for sure. I felt good about the game and what I was watching. Not the loss, No moral victories. But given what this team looked like against Seattle and Detroit, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, where they had no chance at all, both of those games over by halftime, you know, they had guys out there that just weren't anywhere near good enough to compete with teams like those. Madrid against Miami and this one against a Denver team that has now won 9 games in a row and has just a legitimate shutdown defense and has all year long, not last night. Again, I think Houston's right now is number one. I think Denver's number two, but whatever. That's quibbling. But Kingsbury, Mariota, Ertz, Terry, the O-line, the running game. I mean, Washington's offense rolled up 419 yards, the second most of the season against Denver's defense. They were 8-for-17 on third down, the best third down performance against Denver's number one third down defense this season. They were 3-for-3 on fourth down in the game. They lost. They lost the game. But they're going to be a live team here in the next few weeks. The caveat to that would be, of course, if they get Jaden back, they continue to get healthier. And then, by the way, the players that come back stay healthy. That's a big thing, right? I liked last night. Denver may not win the Super Bowl. They're obviously a playoff team. They may be the number one seed in the AFC when all is said and done. I'm not sold on Knicks quite yet. It's early. I think he's got a great coordinator. He's got some good pieces. And obviously the biggest supporting piece for Bo Nix as a young quarterback is playing on a team with an absolute dominant defense. I think they're really missing J.K. Dobbins the last few games in the backfield. He was having a phenomenal season. But the Skins were right there, man. One play away. But damn, that Nick Benito, what a star player he has turned into. One of the best edge defensive players in the league. We talked about it on Friday. They had to keep him from wrecking the football game. He's done it multiple times this year. He made a great play. You know, he made a great play. If he didn't, it was a walk-off win because McNichols was wide open on a perfectly designed two-point play that, you know, obviously accounted for greatness on the other side. Nick Benito is great. And Marcus Mariota, yeah, he had to get it up in the air and put more air under it, for sure. Tough loss. Really, really tough loss. I wanted it so badly watching it last night for selfish reasons, because it's just better when the team comes off a win. It's just better overall for people like me than losing is. It just is. I know some of you over the years have debated that. And look, some of the controversy, some of the craziness was not terrible for us, but winning's always much better. And I just thought, you know, if they had pulled this off last night, no playoff scenario talk, but at 4-8, then they had a chance to get to 6-8 against Minnesota and the Giants. Minnesota, Brian Flores and that defense, they're no joke, okay? Now, their offense is a mess. Their offense is a mess. I have no idea if it's going to be J.J. McCarthy or Max Brosmer, who threw 4 picks and scored no points against Seattle. Wouldn't it be nice to get 4 picks in a game? Got one last night. Got one. Got a takeaway last night. That was huge. But just would have been, you know, the idea of the possibility of getting to 6-8 before that Philadelphia game on December 20th, where you're not mathematically eliminated yet. For all practical purposes, you would still be, you know, eliminated. But it just would have maybe given us something legitimate to cheer for this year. But they didn't win. They lost. Another loss. 7 straight losses. That's a fact. And what's also a fact is why they've lost 7 in a row. And last night was a reminder that they are a much better football team with, you know, even just some of their best players back on the field. All right. My game take next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. If you want to listen that way, you can also watch this show. We stream it on our Team 980 YouTube channel. When you get there, please hit the subscribe button and hit the like button. It takes 10 seconds to do it, and it helps us out a lot.
At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia, points north, south, east, and west. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley live on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page, live on Monumental Sports Network, and wherever you are listening to the program. Good morning, Brian. How do you do?
I'm good, brother. What's happening with you?
It was a late night, man.
Yeah, I tell you, this morning, boy, I woke up. And I basically said, working out, we'll have to wait till this afternoon.
Yeah, I had the same thought, man.
That alarm came rather quickly, dog.
I'm on a good streak of jogging, and there was no jogging this morning.
Not this morning, nah. There's a thing is you have to let your body rest.
Yeah.
I'll get it this afternoon.
We were on the air at 10 a.m. in Navy Yard.
God.
I set my alarm for 8:50 a.m. in Bethesda. Shower, just... See you, girls. Girls are home from school today for whatever reason, and I was gone.
It's cold, bro.
Yeah, dude. Last night was cold in Ashburn, Landover.
Imagine where we sit.
Yeah, you're in that wind tunnel.
That thing's like a wind tunnel. Man, I'm telling you. Woo.
Yeah, that's tough.
I was like, and it took DQ forever to get to that damn podium. I was like, can somebody send him?
Could you not take Marcus went first? Could you not take Marcus?
We took Marcus.
Okay.
But then we take the quarterback and the coach. So we're waiting for the coach.
Yeah.
And I'm like, can somebody send him a text and say, yo, them dudes waiting for you to talk?
Yo, he always takes forever.
Nah, he don't take that long like he did last night, though.
It was an interesting – listen, man, I think if you want to be draft pick guy, good for you. You know, last night, not getting the win is good for the draft pick. But I think for that team
– they needed that win.
For how they played, for everything that's gone wrong this season – I mean, just the guts. Listen, they didn't play a perfect game.
No.
Marcus was not
Nobody
great.
Does.
But they showed serious fight, serious guts. Just, thank you.
If you get that effort that they gave last night every game, you'll get more wins than you would losses. And you're playing against a team that had been destroying people, pass rushing and whatever. Brandon told us they could run on them.
Yeah.
Okay, and they were getting a good job of that. I don't know why. Or what? But Rodriguez should one touch in a fourth. He just like they go away from him. It not that he doesn't do anything, but he stopped getting opportunities in the second half, and that's crazy to me.
I don't understand why McNichols doesn't get more work. McNichols, all he does is make plays for you.
He was 6 for 30 last night.
Yeah.
C-Rod, now granted, they're asking him to be the hammer, so like the YPC isn't quite as important. He started better. He finished the game 11 for 41. Mariota ends up your leading rusher in that game. Mm-hmm. But the drive to tie it up at the end of the game. 18 plays, 86 yards. They had 15 yards in penalties. They lost 20 seconds because of penalties and the runoff. Mm-hmm. Two different penalties with 10-second runoffs. And just the guts. Here's an old-school Kornheiser radio show reference. The chaputzvah, the chutzpah that required to keep going. It was they showed so much heart. Yeah. And when a team is 3-8 and coming off a bye and on national TV, it's an easy spot to lay down. And they didn't. Yeah. Now, I'm not like a moral victory guy. Like when you and I.
Yeah, you don't have to be a moral victory guy to see that they play better.
When you
and they play tougher.
Totally. Well, when we came on the air after the Miami game, a lot of people wanted to kind of celebrate that was a tight game that went to overtime. I wasn't there for that because that contest with Miami was two bad teams just repeatedly handing the win back and forth. Mm-hmm. It was just who's gonna mess up last, and unfortunately, it was Washington. Last night was for the night. I'm not saying on the season, but it was two pretty damn evenly matched teams leaving it all on the field, and I was impressed by what they were able to do. I think the return of Terry McLaurin is such an obvious lift for this team.
All those people that have sat here and bashed him, when he's on the field, is different.
Dude.
The defense come at and attack you differently, and the offense can do a lot more.
Dude, I thought Terry last night shows the vertical threat, presents a vertical threat that the team doesn't otherwise have.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think his physicality as a receiver, his ability to just plant that foot, cut inside, get open on those slants. Like, you know what a receiver has to accept when they're going to run those slants?
They don't get hit.
I'm going to get smoked.
Hell yeah.
And Terry got smoked repeatedly. I thought there was some level of, hell, it's Christmas season now, peace on earth, goodwill towards man, for Terry to have the touchdown in overtime. And then get called back on the penalty on Connerly, which of a number of penalties that were completely erroneous, that one was legit. Connerly held the dude. And for that to get called back, and then for Terry to score the touchdown, whatever that was, four plays mm-hmm. later, I just, that felt appropriate, like the universe was making right there. Mm-hmm. The two-point conversion, I not only have zero problem with the call, it's the right call. Oh, it's the only call.
Go for it. I mean, you got momentum, and you go for it. Because let's be real, if they had gone, we have those that are always going to be right. If they had gone for the extra point and still went and lost later, we should have went for the two-point conversion. It's going to be somebody that always goes against whatever they do. But I left that game last night saying, okay, cool. I can accept that because they fought. They played hard. You know, they didn't just go out there and get blown the hell out like they were in a lot of games.
Right.
They were right there. They fought the whole way. You know, and they did stuff to, like, make you think about it. Now, it, like you said, erroneous calls that were made.
That was some wild.
I think my man Shin was down before he threw the ball. I'm telling you, Jay, Shin is just like the knee. And when
you're talking about the Bo Nix touchdown, that was a hell of a play by Nix.
Yeah, it's a hell of a play to throw it, but when you're down, you're down. You know?
I don't think he was down. I think it was as close as it could be, but I don't think he was down.
I think the chin was down, bro. I'm telling right. you. When you look at it, you can see when his arm goes back. The knee hadn't touched, but the damn shin was down, and they call a shin. Normally, when your shin is down, you're down. Point blank.
All right. I think it was hella close. I think the calls that I thought were way worse that they ended up overcoming were the grounding call, where
there was a player right there that kind of went over the head.
Dude, on the broadcast, Terry McCauley, you know, every network has their own
referee
rules expert now.
Yeah.
Terry McCauley does it for NBC. He came on and said, that is absolutely not grounding. I don't know. Like, something has happened, and it was the Monday night game last week, I think, where it was
They called one against him in the other game.
And they were like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Unfortunately, these referees now are just so robotic where they don't make calls on the field. They wait for replay or whatever that New York calling in from the sky is. The aliens running things.
Yeah, they just don't show up at the right time.
Or last night, like, quarterback's got to be allowed to just throw the ball away. He wasn't under imminent pressure. Terry McCauley talking about the intentional grounding call last night on the NBC broadcast.
Intentional grounding. Offense, number 8. A 10-yard penalty. It's a loss of down. Second down.
With the routes up here, this hook, and then when McLaurin went down and it sort of messed up the timing of the route. And I do think Mariota at that point said, I'm just getting rid of it here. Threw it over his head. I guess he just threw it too far.
Terry McCauley?
So this is absolutely not grounding, guys.
Absolutely not.
He throws it over the head of number 17, who is outside the numbers. By rule, that is not intentional grounding.
I thought of all the egregious calls last night, that one to me was by far
but
the worst.
But that's the thing, though, and this is my problem with the league. It has been my problem forever. Everybody gets scrutinized when mistakes made. Players, coaches, everybody, but the damn zebras. They get to make dumbass calls, and they show up the next week and they make some more dumbass calls. And they show up and they keep refereeing and keep getting paid. Why is it they're not scrutinized? Okay? And if replay assist is there, you're looking at McCauley, just make that call. Why couldn't they say the same damn thing to the referee and say, that is not intentional grounding?
The one that I was shocked that went Washington's way was, and this was still first half, I think, when Biadasz got cheap shotted by the Broncos D-line, and then Tunsil came in and just shoved the dude, just cleared him out.
Yeah.
They always get the second guy. And somehow on that one, they got the first guy.
But you saw him. They kept doing it. But eventually, like I've always said, if the referee makes the damn call or something that's obvious, they can stop stuff. So I don't see where it was wrong. This time, they got the right guy.
Right.
Because if that guy doesn't do what the hell he's doing, Tunsil doesn't come over to push him.
Right.
So, I mean, listen, it's just the referees got to stop sitting up here waiting for the retaliation and call a damn foul on the first or on the initial thing. If you do that, then a lot of times you don't have to worry about no retaliation.
I agree. It was a really hard-fought back-and-forth game, and you love to see Washington showing up like that in a situation where they could easily pack it up. I think it says a lot about – I know that, hell, especially at 3-9 and – is this an 8-game losing streak now? I mean, that's not good. But – It's easy to be cynical with a 3-9 team and talk about when DQ talks about brotherhood and the fight in that locker room. But when you see a game like last night, it just proves how real that is. You got to tip your hat to Denver on some level. I didn't think Bo Nix was very good, but when you look at the final stats, he's 29-45 for 320 with a touchdown, delivered in overtime when it really mattered. The play by Ingram, the Washington defense was good last night.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first time just the terrible tackling kind of coverage bust happens is on a tight end seam route in overtime. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, Ingram went for, 45 or something on that play? As a quick aside, tight end should not wear number 1. That was throwing me for a loop all night. I know that anybody can wear any number they want. Tight ends do not belong wearing number 1.
If you got a little speed, you wear number 1.
He doesn't have much hands, though. I thought,
you know who shouldn't wear number 1? Big dudes. Like D tackles and stuff like that.
0 I can get down with, but
I don't even think they should wear 0. I'm just saying.
Last night was just a really good example of last year, everything broke your way. And this year, everything is a year later, a year older, and a year different. Like, mm-hmm. I thought last year, Wagner, Mariota, and Ertz, every time they were on the field, they were excellent.
Yeah.
They were excellent. And last night, Wagner, Mariota, and Ertz all made big plays at crucial moments, but also we saw the flip side of that coin, where they also made the wrong play in big moments.
Yeah.
Wagner, Bo Nix gifted him the touchdown. He threw it right to him.
He ain't seeing. Like I said last night on the show, Wagner was like, I'm invisible. Throw it right here. And he threw it dead to his chest.
The way I wrote it out on Twitter during the play is Bo Nix complete to Bobby Wagner.
That was 100% complete.
It was like he threw it right to him, dude.
I guess he figured, like, oh, he ran 50-something. He won't catch it.
Right. And then Bobby, late in that game, in the overtime, was just in an unfortunate situation that we've seen. Zach Ertz finished the game 10 for 106. Ertz was really good, except on a big third down play, can't come up with the ball. Now, the Broncos safety made a hell of a play on it. Late in that game, Terry bailed him out on fourth down, but Ertz had a chance at the touchdown in overtime, mm-hmm. wasn't able to bring it in. And then Mariota was good, but that interception early in this game was god awful.
That was bad.
I don't know what the decision making process is on that play.
But it's like it seems when he is in between, I should just run this or no, I can make a play. He never just runs it, and he has the ability to run as well as any running quarterback
totally,
in this league.
Totally.
And I think sometimes he should just tuck that one and go, because when he was running, you could see him. He could split the guys, may get 5-6 yards. But you don't throw that one into a crowd, not into a crowd like that,
dude. I got to go back and watch it. I haven't had time, but he had a quick look, didn't take it, hesitated. Then it was. It reminded me of the interception in Miami.
Like, it looks exactly like it.
He just kind of like
when he does that
out.
Double clutch thing.
Yeah,
he double clutches, but he doesn't pull it back in. He leaves it up there, and then he tries to throw it. He don't get enough velocity on it.
Totally.
Yeah.
And just big trouble, obviously, last night. I think, you know, the one play we haven't talked about was the most remarkable play of the night.
Burks?
The Burks touchdown catch.
Yeah, with the finger that he just had surgery
on. He just
on.
Had surgery on that middle finger, which is what he went up and high-pointed that pass
with. Yeah,
yeah. The box score for Treylon Burks last night, 1 catch, 5 yards, 1 touchdown.
Dang.
That does not tell the story
I'll
on that.
I'll take that.
The toughest questions, I would say. Now, they played really explosive offenses during that 4-game stretch where everything was terrible, right? And then the last 2 games, they haven't. Miami is just a mess, and Denver is just not an explosive group. It's a good team. It's a well-coached team. They have a good defense. That's not an explosive group.
But Miami is explosive on offense. They got some speed on offense.
Okay.
Because they were cooking yesterday.
Tua's just not.
Yeah. I mean, Tua's, he's had some games.
Right.
He also has some duds. I think when he has to make a decision, when he does stuff in rhythm, he's unbelievable.
Right.
But the moment you make him have to say, oh, I got to.
Or move from the spot.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my point is, one of the toughest things I think to reconcile as like we start to look at the totality of this year and where things have and haven't gone right. Since DQ has taken over calling the defensive plays, mm-hmm. the defense just, it's running a cleaner operation. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not seeing the massive coverage bust. You're not seeing, like, they're able to generate more pressure. And you wonder if that change happens earlier. Or just, like, what is the change so significantly that can happen like that? You know what I mean? And some of it, I think, is the opponents. Like, you're not facing Jahmyr Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown. You're facing different players.
But what it is now, and I made this comment when DQ first came in, you have a guy now who understands the flow of it, how to set up stuff. He's done it for multiple times. You know, you normally get like, hell, Jaden came in here last year, was remarkable, but he did make some rookie mistakes. You saw those things. Yo, you see Bo Nix in his second year right now. He does some great things, but he does some things that make you scratch your head. You know, those things happen. But as he goes on, he'll have that flow with it. He'll see a defense and he'll know what they're trying to do to him. With Dan knows how to set up stuff, you know, make you think one thing and something else happens. I watched one of those games, what was it? Earlier yesterday, I think. No. It was a game on Thanksgiving. They were blitzing corners from outside, inside, 15. They'll have a safety coming down like he's coming down, creeping. He'll blitz. And the quarterbacks never saw it. You know, and I'm like, well, damn, that's how you get it done. But it's like when you are the first, and listen, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for Joe. When you get the first time doing something, you want to do so much that you don't do anything right. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you know what you're trying to do, but the flow of it is not going right with you. Well, and I think that's a lot of it.
And I think the offense has largely been so bad this year, and a lot of that I think has been injury driven, that you don't get any of that complimentary football. Last night you got some of that. Yeah. Like, we could talk about DQ's decision to punt early in that game from the 39. And on the surface, it looks pretty lame, frankly. But they punt. Tress does his job, pins him at like the 11. Mm-hmm. Then they get a three
that
and out.
Has some spin on it.
And so, like, that's playing complimentary football. That's, we're going to rely on our defense because then we'll get the ball back around the 50. They kind of win that little micro battle field of possession. Thank you. And I think when you see that, it's like, all right, you see them executing larger plans better, not resulting in wins, but, you know, last night looked a lot different. Like, they forced punts.
You'll get more wins with that effort last night than you would with
totally.
Then you would not.
Like, the team, they played two Sunday night games wearing these Super Bowl era uniforms, two of them. The team that played last night would not recognize the team that played Seattle.
No.
Like,
I'm with that.
Just night and day different.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to take a brief moment. My headphones are in Ashburn, which is unfortunate. There's this backup set that are Jeff's that weren't working. So my man, Heavy Metal Chris, is sitting in for Jeff today, gave me his. Do you see how large these things are? Hey,
Chris got a rather big head. But your ears are reaching it.
I barely, dog. We're hanging on for dear life right here.
Usually I have an ear pulled back.
All right, we're just getting warmed up on Bemidji and Finley. Want to talk about the decision to go for two. I don't think it's much of a discussion, but I'm open if others do. Nobody go anywhere. We're going to have Joe Theismann join us, open these phone lines up. It is, unfortunately, a Misery Monday. If you're looking to make a move in the DMV, there's only one person to call. That is John Leahy.
Just like a recent seller, they wanted to sell their home, and they were told that, you know, they were asking $20,000 over the asking price. And then everything went smoothly when they went out there, and they had no stress, they had no setbacks, and the sale closed right on time. The client had been told previously by another agent that, you know, you're not going to be able to make no money off of this thing. But John rolled in, and as I said, they got $20,000 over the asking price. Check out John Leahy's guaranteed offer right there on his website. You can get the ball rolling at johnsalesdmv.com. Talk about our good friend John Leahy and the Fine Living Group of eXp Realty. John offers you flexible fees, customized to your needs, and he knows that life happens. So if needed, he will let you out your contract at any time.
Let's be real. Sometimes the reason you got to move is a stressful reason. These are stressful times. You want somebody that will relieve the stress as much as possible. Whatever the situation is, divorce, death in the family, maybe you got a new job, maybe you lost your job. John and the Fine Living Group have the options and strategies you need to take care of things quickly for the most money possible and the least amount of stress possible. That's why I would go with John. That's why B would go with John. Call John today, 301-900-3052. Go online to johnsalesdmv.com, or what's even easier, just Google John Leahy Group and start packing.
Danny, yesterday, the losing streak did reach 7, but the Commanders played one of the more entertaining games in Week 13 in the NFL, taking the number one seed in the AFC as of this moment, the 10-2 Broncos, to overtime. They fought hard. They played a much more competitive, entertaining football game. I've got no venom. I liked everything about yesterday. There were some things we can get into that either they didn't do well or some coaching question marks or what have you. But the fact that they're now 6th in the NFL draft order, the fact that they gave the Broncos all they could handle, the fact that the offense with Terry McLaurin back looked way, 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 way better, and they did some really good things that, frankly, almost nobody else has been able to do against the number one defense in the league, the fact that the defense has made it 2 much stronger games in a row since Joe Witt lost his play-calling duties and Dan Quinn took over. Things are looking up for the Burgundy and Gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin coming back was fun to watch. Just a reminder that, you know, when healthy, when he's right, he can be pretty effective. That was really cool for him. Even on a pitch count, you could still see he was a point of emphasis for this offense. So for me, watching this game, and I recognize I'm different than everybody else. I see something that doesn't make sense to me. I can't let it go. Other people can kind of let it get lost in the sauce and watch and enjoy. Of my checklist of things that I wanted, I got a lot of them. You just mentioned it. Had they won, would have been catastrophic. They'd have, pick a 10th or 11th, depends on your math. I'd have to go check the latest up-to-date Tankathon type rankings in terms of opponent win percentage, and then it's an inverse. So you would have been 10th or 11th and going in the wrong direction. There's a couple bad teams made the mistake of winning this past Sunday. But I saw a group that did show some improvement, that fought, as you said. That was probably their best overall football game of the year against a quality opponent. I was pretty impressed with both sides of the ball. They moved the ball. They were better on the ground against Denver than they'd been in months, it felt like. Defensively, they were, again, not great, because I don't think they have great. I don't think they have that gear, but they were pretty good. The things that will frustrate me forever until they're different, the amount of Zach Ertz featuring, 13 targets for an oft-injured veteran on his final year of a deal. Benson, they can't get a target, played, I think, 10 snaps, 12 snaps, 17% of snaps. They can't feature Jalen Lane. Johnny Newton is sitting there behind a bunch of aging veterans. I'm not asking for crazy stuff, by the way. Just more playing time for second-round picks from last year. And maybe if an emphasis on that, maybe it happens as the season goes. But there was a lot of boxes checked yesterday.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things you're asking for, you'll get more of in a few weeks as we get closer to the finish line. We're still about a third of the way left in this race. You know, it's not even December 1st as they're playing that game yesterday. And there are six games in a 17-game schedule left. They're not going to completely just flip a switch and punt and start playing all the kids, although I wouldn't mind that. It's just not how the reality of the league works, obviously. We'll spar for the next 5 weeks over whether or not it would have been catastrophic to win the game, because I just disagree with the idea that this team that has not won in seven games now and in 8 or 9 weeks, whatever it is technically, you know, that them winning a game, I'll save the word catastrophic for other things, frankly. I don't think it would have been that damaging, because whether they end up picking 5th or 8th or 11th when you don't have a quarterback and the best thing to do is to trade down, I'm not sure if it's as huge a difference. I think it will be a difference, but it's not as huge a difference maybe as if they were looking for a quarterback and they needed to get as high as possible when they were taking Daniels or May or Williams when they were trying to get up to number 2. But again, we've got 5 weeks to spar over that, and I'm sure we will go round and around. But specific to last night, the product was just so much better. This is what I have been wanting, really, for many, many weeks. When you play a good football team, look like you belong. And I think the fact that they're getting healthier now is the reason for what we got to see yesterday. Let's talk offense for a moment. Terry McLaurin got 14 targets and 7 catches for 96 yards and a touchdown. And that does not even account for the 30-yard post he ran, taken on contact at the goal line to what would have been Tyre win the game early on in OT when they would come back down the field and score again on a Terry McLaurin slant. So just, it could have easily been 8 for like 115.
Yeah, just to add a little color to that, he only played 51% of snaps on a pitch count. Understandable, by the way, because last time they just said, okay, go play a full game, he ended up hurt and missed another month and a half. So he basically received a target on 1/3 of the snaps he was in.
Which is pretty amazing.
Which is an astounding amount.
Now, I will say 50% of snaps last night is basically a normal game's worth, because they ran 85 plays, which was the most that they have run since 2016 in the London game against the Bengals. Partially because of going to overtime, but really more accurately because they converted 8 third downs, because they went on really long drives. They did it, by the way, in the hardest way possible against the number one defense in the NFL. I said before the game, we were talking about this, it's impossible to go on these long 10, 11, 12, 13 play drives against the Broncos. If you have to do that, you will not have any chance. And they did it time and time and time again. It was a really, really incredible offensive plan by Cliff Kingsbury that worked. I know Mariota threw one egregious interception that everybody will talk about, and you're allowed to. It's one of the 85 plays, and it was a very, very heavily weighted play. It was me after Thanksgiving dinner. Having said that, he low-key cooked otherwise. I mean, he throws for almost 300 yards. He runs for 55 yards against the number one defense in the league. But you can just see the difference, Danny, when you have Terry McLaurin out there. What it does for Zach Ertz, suddenly getting more man coverage and then running some of those zone beaters where there's not as much attention paid to him on some of those deep overs where he's crossing the field, getting hit for 21 and 19 yards on a couple of big-time plays. Great throws from Mariota, layered over top of defenders. The game changes a little bit. You get an opportunity to run Deebo Samuel, who is just kind of forgotten, because when you line him out as a receiver and you run him down the field on a go ball, nobody really thinks you're targeting him. and they hit that 38-yarder down to the one-yard line because they're paying extra attention and bracketing Terry McLaurin, who's been featured throughout the second half. The offense changes. He really is truly a game changer for them. And we've talked off and on about, like, who's the injury that killed them the most outside of Jaden Daniels? And I've mentioned Dietrich Wise, who they're, you know, couldn't set the edge after he was lost. People will bring up Austin Ekeler. The answer is obviously Terry McLaurin. You just saw it last night. They're such a different offense, and it gives you some real hope when you get Daniels back, whether that's against the Vikings or the Giants. And more importantly, let's be honest, in 2026, if you have Terry out there and you have a true legitimate threat at wide receiver, this thing's going to look very, very different.
The best way I can explain it is, or the way I thought about it, is bad defenses became very good against Washington. Now, the overall numbers weren't that horrendous, but you could see it was a very pedestrian group. Every inch was fought for. It was nuclear fusion with chopsticks, right? Where they had to negotiate everything. Every window was tighter than all hell. They couldn't run the football against terrible defenses like Chicago or Dallas or any of the others because there was no threat. There was a threat yesterday. There was absolutely a threat, even with the great Patrick Surtain back there. That kid, by the way, is unbelievably good.
Best
My God, what a baller.
League.
What a baller he is.
Probably not that close right now. That's cornerback one.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to say. And if there's someone else great, good for him too. That guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you could see the difference. I think you said it very well. The even if you weren't going over the top, and they did a couple different times, maybe they fell in love with it to a degree because I think they're running it so well. Maybe there was more things they could have done that weren't taking shots, but they were pretty determined. They had a plan and they stuck to it. I was so impressed with that competitiveness and the ability to rally after the bye week. I know they're pros and they're supposed to be able to do that, but human nature, man. A really good team's coming to town. Your season's lost. You're terrible. Everybody knows you're terrible, and everyone's making fun of you or the punchline. They stayed in that game and kept counterpunching, and there was no rollover in them, which you could easily see happening when a first-place team from the AFC comes to town with that vice-like defense. So it was impressive.
Yeah. I just, it warmed the heart to see them play a good team well. When you played the Denvers a month ago, it was 44-22. Now, it should also be acknowledged, Bo Nix is somewhat limited, watching him in person for the first time yesterday. And I think the Denver offense is a keep-you-in-the-game offense. This is how they've played every single game all year long. They are the first team in the history of the league, by the way, to trail in all 12 of their first 12 games and to have a record where they've won at least 10 times. And they constantly do this in the fourth quarter, where they steal a game from the Giants, where they beat the Colts at the horn, where they beat the Chiefs at the horn. Now they beat Washington in overtime. This is what they do. This is their game, and this is a league with tiny margins where you either make the winning play or you don't, and the team that always does Denver is 10-2, and the team that just hasn't in games like Chicago and Miami and this one, Washington, is 3-9, and instead of being 6-6 and a wild card hopeful, your season is now completely over. But credit the Broncos. They always make the winning plays. I think they are well coached. Nick shows up in the big moments when he has to. He was excellent on that five-play drive in overtime where they go right down the field for 76 yards. They finally get their first huge explosive of the game where they get Evan Engram working on Bobby Wagner. He does a little whip route, leaves Wagner in his dust, and then runs for 41 yards. But I thought we got our answer to, was this defensive improvement just about Miami, or is there something to this? There's clearly something to this.
There's something to it.
I wouldn't want to be Joe Witt right now because it looks so much better and so much different without him calling the plays. I'm not saying everything's fixed. It's not going to be fixed. They have real problems on defense that you cannot fix until the offseason. They have personnel issues. You don't have linebackers that can run with tight ends. In this league, that's a death sentence. You don't have speed in the second level of your defense. In this league, that is going to make you not very good on that side of the ball. They can't really set edges, something the Broncos, with their run game and their injury to J.K. Dobbins, weren't going to take much advantage of yesterday. Their strengths on defense are few and far between. But now you're just a professional outfit that's not going to be great on defense, which is not a crime, by the way.
Right.
There's a lot of those defenses out there.
If they had this whole year where they were middle of the pack on defense, it's a very different season.
100%.
Even with all the injuries and all the different things on offense that didn't go right.
If you play the game you played yesterday against the Vikings and Max Brosmer or J.J. McCarthy, they score in the teens and you win the game. If you play the game they played either against Miami or Denver yesterday against the Giants in a couple weeks, You probably turn Jackson Dart over a couple times. The Giants might have 20 points, and you win that football game. Like, that's the difference between yesterday and what became the norm when they were the first team in 23 years to lose by 20 or more points for a month straight.
Yeah, you can go back and look at it. If you played that way against the Falcons, I think you probably win that game. By the way, the Falcons, good heavens. But you go back and look at the Dallas game. If you played that way against Dallas, that's a good offense with good pieces, right? But maybe you're in that game. You got a chance to win it. You know, I don't think you beat Seattle that day. I don't think you beat Detroit that day, the way that they were playing. Kansas City, probably the same deal. You'd lose a one-score game on the road to a team with Savvy and Moxie, et cetera. But, again, it's a different season. We're talking about a far more competitive product instead of a group that got outscored by almost 100 points over a handful of weeks. You're talking about just a different team, different year. And this is just one of those, bummer, we were that close, just a couple breaks didn't go our way, instead of this was a meltdown. This was the worst-case scenario. Which scenario, Danny? All of them. Every single thing that could have gone wrong did, and not just kind of wrong. It went as wrong as ever been.
Ertz went off 10 for 106 on 13 targets. He was awesome. He had three plays, though, where, and this is the most Zach Ertz thing ever, where your athleticism being limited and some of I guess we just say limitations for him.
Yep.
You know, show up. We're deep down the field. Now, ball hung in the air a little too long, and then Alex Singleton made an amazing play to punch the ball out. What would have been a huge play to set up a field goal in the fourth quarter. By the way, that's Alex Singleton's story. He's an all-timer. This linebacker for the Broncos. This is the same guy, by the way, that played an entire game with a torn ACL last year. 23 days from having a mass removed and testicular cancer. He was on the field flying around last night and made maybe the play of the game defensively for the Broncos against Ertz. Then he has the play back in the end zone where he can't make the catch. He had it didn't end up mattering, but he had a play where he fell just short of the sticks again. So, like, those are those things that people that don't like the Ertz experience, which is kind of a them problem, they're going to focus on those three plays. Where I come from, when you have 10 catches for 106 yards as a tight end in the NFL, and the offense kind of goes through you, and your offense scores 26 to almost knock off one of the best defenses in the league, I'm going to tip my cap to you. But he goes for 100. McLaurin goes for 96. Debo, because of the 38-yard play, goes for 64. I like that they got Colson Yankoff involved. He's an athletic guy at the tight end position. That 14-yard catch he made was a pretty nice play. The one thing I'll say about Ertz that I didn't get is they designed this tight end screen to him that was kind of DOA, pretty obviously. That's just not a play that you should run for Ertz. That's where, if you're running a tight end screen there, just go ahead and put Ben Sinnott out there or give that to Yankoff with his speed. It's kind of what he did at UCLA. This is a guy that lined up at running back some for the Bruins in college. So I didn't really get that usage. But they ran a play from on a first and 10 to start a drive from under center with 13 personnel where they went play action, roll out, and hit Terry McLaurin for a 16-yard explosive. Be still, my beating heart.
You must have been so excited.
I mean, I just about ripped my shirt off in the press box.
There were 16 targets to tight ends, and Ben Sinnott didn't get one. I can't. Other people can, and they can move on, and they'll be able to talk about it. Or not care, and just talk about everything else. I just can't get over it.
2-3 weeks from now, I'll join you in anger. It's just not the time of the season where I'm going to go crazy about that. I don't like it, but there's a difference between endorsing it, which I'm not doing, or liking it and being angry
and my thing,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not being able to let it go.
Like, you have an axe to grind, and like you've now got this thing that you're obsessing over. I'm just not going to join you there, but in 3 weeks, we'll be in the same place anyway if Ben Sinnott is still not involved.
I think that's fair. Everyone's welcome to join me, or not, or yell at me, whatever it is. Again, I'm not saying he needs 13 targets. One would be nice. Let's go crazy and get two. The little tight end screen thing you mentioned, or that rollout with 13 personnel couldn't go to him. Would have been nice. I'd love to see the second-round pick play. I know that's novel and crazy for a team that's 3-9, but I digress. But overall,
speaking of second round kit picks, really quickly, I don't want to make like this grandiose comment on this because I have not gone back and watched all 22 on this. But I can't. There were at least two or three times where I noticed Johnny Newton just getting blown off the ball in the run game last night. Now, a couple of them happened in a drive where he ended up having a really nice pressure as well. But we might be at a point with him where it's kind of helping in the passing game or not helping that much because he's an undersized defensive tackle.
Yep.
There's clearly a reason why they don't play him that much. So this is something to dive in on. But he was the 36th pick in the draft. So I think your point is perfectly reasonable when you're saying, okay, guys, we're 3-9 here. There's five games to go. Johnny Newton, Ben Sinnott. There's other guys we could name.
Sure.
Like Brandon Coleman would be one of them.
Yeah, a little bit more Jordan McGee. Turn that fader up. Again, they don't have
flashed again last night.
They don't have a ton of young pieces. So I'm not talking about, like, you know, going full, hey, Wizards, call up the G League. They don't have that. There simply aren't players that I'm really that interested in. There's a handful, and those guys don't get opportunities.
Speaking of Brandon Coleman, though, I do want to mention, I thought the O-line was awesome last night.
For sure.
In pass protection. Yeah. This is the group that has close to 20 more sacks than any other team in the NFL coming in, and you would not have known it. They had one in the game. Some of it is Mariota's decisiveness, and I do give him credit for this as a veteran quarterback. I think generally he's pretty good at setting protections. The ball comes out pretty fast, and he deserves to be respected for that. But if you look at some of the next-gen stats numbers, and I posted this at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter if you want to go find it, the Broncos got pressure 17% of the time, which was their lowest pressure rate since Week 3, 2023, in that game where they gave up 70 points to the Miami Dolphins. And then if you look at some of the individual matchups, Laremy Tunsil on one of the best pass rushers in the league, Nick Benito. Now, I think he was wearing a cast and he complained about it after the game affecting him. But still, two pressures on 28 matchups, so Tunsil dominated him. Jonathan Cooper did not get a single pressure in 26 matchups against Josh Connerly, who, despite the hold that took away the McLaurin touchdown, which as a lineman, heavy lies the crown here, this is what happens, everyone will kill you for. Mm. But he was really, really good in pass pro. And then Sam Cosmi, one pressure on 55 pass blocks against the interior. That's a really, really good interior.
Yeah, they're good at everything.
So you're starting to see this group ascend, come together. This is the planned five. They got to find a way to keep these guys intact going into next season because it could be a real strength for them.
So to me, one part plan, which was, we know when our shots are going to be there, and we, you know, those are the ones you need to block up, right, to give the receiver time to make a move, et cetera. The other part is enough of the quick game that, and it was accessible quick stuff, because it's one thing just to say, throw it quickly. Wait, do you have somewhere to go? Does the read take you there? Does the play design leave something open almost automatically? It did a lot. But to me, it was the way they ran the ball. I did not expect that at all. I did not expect them to be able to run it as effectively, especially on the interior. I mean, they were shoving it on Denver for a decent amount. Again, it wasn't one of those Ravens where, you know, Derrick Henry has 160, some guy you never heard of has 55.
Ahead of the chains, man.
But it was ahead of the chain stuff. It was 4.5, 5.5 yards on first down consistently, and they were really, really good in that regard. Just nothing fancy either. It wasn't like super well-designed, great comeback, cutback counter, this, that, and the other. This was, to me, a lot of power football, and they ran it really, really well in that game.
At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.